on 1116 SEN. The Whiteboard with Robert Shaw and Brent Stanton.
Well, the Bombers have, bar one quarter, had a had the dream start to the season. They really went within a quarter of knocking off last year's grand finalists, and that is saying something, and bounced back with a win over arch rivals. Brent, welcome to you. Thanks for dropping in.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
This is the sort of start of the season that, I've got to say, if it was any other club other than Essendon, everybody would be a buzz. But for the last two or three years, Essendon have got off to good starts. Now, you were able to right the ship last year, but there is a bit of sense in the football public. Okay, we've seen Essendon come out of the box as well. I'm sure that every hand on deck down at Essendon to make sure that this isn't just how the team starts, it's how the team plays the whole year. I'm sure that's a focus.
Yeah, it certainly is. Obviously, the focus area over the pre-season for the football club was to get some mature age recruits in, and we've certainly done that with James Gwilt, Adam Cooney, Jonathan Giles, Sean McKernan. And that's the sort of thing that we're looking for. We're probably a little bit inexperienced in the last couple of years, and that's maybe the reason. We're not making excuses for fade-outs probably in the last couple of years, but that's certainly an area that the football department are focused on.
So, Stance, you believe that it's a depth thing, so you've got more players with senior experience once you get into the third quarter of the year, whereas in the past your younger players have dropped off. It's not a short-term fix, although you are heading, I believe, to the finals this year.
I don't think it's a short-term fix. Yep. I think it's a good thing for the football club right now. We've certainly got a lot of good young players who are willing to learn, and they're probably just not at that time to play senior footy week in and week out. For example, like Jackson Merritt, Nick O'Brien, these sort of guys, they're probably not up to playing league football week in, week out. But you get likes of Adam Cooney, and Sean McKernan hasn't played yet, but James Gwilt played last week. But I think it's just going to be a mixture of between 30 and 33 guys that gets you through the whole year, and we probably haven't had that previous years.
Just for the sake of a certain fantasy football team with a lot of money riding on it from me and... Anyhow, Lockie Dalgleish, I thought... Did you see the goal he kicked in the NAB Challenge? He's a cracking type. I see his emergency. Tell us a bit about him, and I think a man out after your own heart, he can make some yards with the ball in hand. He really can.
Yeah, Lockie Dalgleish is a very exciting player. Obviously, you've seen him a little bit through the NAB Cup. As you said, that was a fantastic goal. It was almost a bit like the white goal.
Yeah, that's
what goal I said last year. And
we commented on that.
He played a few games. I think it was 2 years ago now. He's unfortunate with injuries at the moment, or previously. And as you said, he's been emergency. And he's a really likely type. We're pretty blessed in that area of our field with Mark Bagley, Michael Hibbard, Courtney Dempsey, who hasn't played a game yet, and now Lockie Dalgleish. So it's sort of a spot that those five, six guys are fighting for.
Are you allowed to say the reason Gleeson's keeping out Dempsey? And like, I know you're an Essendon boy, but we're trying to talk about selection issues. Did he get the jump, and it's basically a competition for the Hibbert's other halfback flank at the moment, as you see?
Yeah, that's certainly the challenge at the moment, and probably the only reason Marty's maybe in front is that Courtney had a few injuries leading into the season, so he needed a little bit of match practice, and also maybe probably the versatility that Marty can play on ball and even go forward a little bit. And that's certainly a big area of our football team at the moment, is that a lot of players can play everywhere.
Yeah,
And you've probably seen over the last 3 weeks that Brendan Goddard, Dyson Heppel played through halfback as well. Like, Job goes forward, Cooney comes up, David Zaharakis has played forward most of the time. He can come up in the midfield. So it's a versatility that we've got at the moment that is actually keeping blokes in and probably out of the side at the same time.
Stance, we heard before Mark was going through an article, and that Tate Pears is playing forward, and he's limited to 9 kilometres per game. You're around the 18 mark, or your best is 18. Are you monitored constantly with the GPS? Are you told your numbers are down? Can you improve your game by knowing that you're not running or working as hard? Is that a feedback mechanism for AFL games?
Yeah, it certainly is. Probably more so VFL, there's probably limits if you're coming back from injury. Tate's coming back from post-season surgery and pretty much his first game back for the year. So he hadn't really had too much match practice, and they've found that the sports scientists and the physios and that sort of stuff find that you've got to get a certain amount of kilometres in your legs to hopefully reduce the risk of injury.
Yeah.
And that's sort of building up through training. So we're monitored throughout training. They get a baseline of each player and where you have to be at. Then if you don't reach those baselines, it's sort of work for an extra 15, 20 minutes after training. And if you don't get to a certain level during a game, it will be a top-up sort of thing on a Monday or Tuesday to hopefully sustain the work that you've put in over the last 4 months.
You're 28, you're 200-plus games. You're obviously different to a Zach Merritt. What's the lack of match practice, did that affect you personally, or were you able to prepare yourself based on the simulation training because of your base?
Asked a fair few times over the last couple of weeks, as you can imagine. And
yeah, but it's different for every player, yeah, I would imagine.
I feel it is different for every player. Maybe, yeah, some guys would say that they need probably one game and that's it. Other guys would probably say they need two or three.
Are you a natural starter yourself?
From my point of view, I wouldn't have minded playing just one game, even if it was a half. You can do as much training as you like, but your teammates sort of know you pretty well. So it's the combat and that sort of stuff that you got to get in that first game just to prepare yourself for AFL footy, because the opposition are going to throw a lot of different stuff at you than what your teammates would at training.
Brent Stanton is in for the whiteboard right throughout the hour. If you've got any questions, we'll do them off the SMS to start off with, 0433 98 11 16. All right, I have to be really honest here, Brent. We do a program every Sunday morning, Inside Football, and we just contend ourselves with matters football. And I watched the game, Sydney versus Essendon, and I said that as the team clearly was, you know, gasping for air in the last quarter, I was extremely surprised that you didn't bob up, because you didn't have a lot of it in the first half, and generally Brent Stanton gets you at some point in time, and there were very few numbers in the last half and in the last quarter. Now, I wonder if there was a reason for it, by the way, just to balance it out and be fair. We noted an improvement in game two to the point of, you know, being one of the best players.
Don't apologise
for
round protecting
three.
Him.
Well, I'm just saying.
He's copped it from experts.
No, I'm just saying that it was.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean.
But we were in a quandary, weren't we?
We were looking for people. We were looking, stands for people, and I brought up who did his hamstring? Footscray boy. I've had a
Cooney.
Mental. So Cooney.
Oh, look,
I brought up Cooney's kicked three goals. He'd done the practice games. He'd done the pre-season, yet we didn't think watching the game that he was brought up the field enough to engineer some run.
And also we noted that David Myers going off so early denied Essendon what Sydney had, which was a great impact sub. Round one at Anzac is always, Anzac Stadium, or ANZ Stadium, pardon me, is a tough game. It seems to be a heavier, is that fair to say it's a heavier ground than others to run through?
Yeah, it's a different field. Obviously, there was a game of rugby league on it the night before as well, and it's a completely different surface than what you'd find at the MCG or even Etihad. I suppose they chop it up a fair bit, and it's a fairly sandy base. To your question before, I played a little bit of a different role. Against Sydney, I played half back, even back pocket at times that night. We were probably one short in the back line with David Myers going down. And to your question, Shorey, without saying too much, Cooney was probably a little bit injured in that game.
Yeah, right.
So
that's
the reason why he stayed deep as well. But the coaches and the playing group admitted that we did a lot of things wrong in that last half.
So it's a good time to ask Shorey. You've got Brent Stanton playing a defensive role, which would have had him run a lot less than Brent normally does. And in the last quarter, there's just not enough ball moving forward in the hands of Essendon players because they are knackered. Was that the time to release Brent into the midfield and get that run, sort of a faux substitution almost, because
I think Howlett came on. And
yeah, he would have been such a good sub too, Howlett, because he's a quick impact player.
He was on in the first 5 minutes, yeah, wasn't it? Because of Myers. Myers could have gone back there. They didn't have the experience. Dempsey, so Brent's done it before. Done wing, done centre and forward. So he was probably, off the top of my head, you couldn't expect one of the first or second year players to probably do that. So it makes a fair bit of sense, I think. But on that stance, and I know it's a key point about your training, and we've touched on this year, can you give us a thumbnail sketch of the 10-year change in AFL from when you came in with Quinny and Sheeds and me and Harves, and we're all there, and I thought you trained very, very hard for a young player. But where's it gone to now for you?
Yeah, it's certainly changed over the last 10, coming up 12th year now, so 12 pre-seasons down, and from the first one to now, it doesn't get any easier, that's for sure. But just the type of training that we're doing, probably back then it was all about running and skills training, and now on top of that, there's a lot of cross training as well. So you might do your 3 major skill sessions week still, but on top of that, you're probably doing another 3 or 4 cross training sessions as well throughout your pre-season block. And then in season, as you've mentioned before, you're pretty much limited to how much you can and can't do because it's so focused on recovery.
So what you can do, Des Tudnham famously got an edge at Collingwood by going beyond and above what the club prescribed and getting, was it John Tolman?
John Tolman, he trained with Johnny Murphy and they went and ran the Caulfield race course, yeah, didn't they?
And wind sprints up Caulfield race course and come to the footy season, they've got an edge on everybody else. I think it was, who was the, maybe John Anear? There was a West Coast player who played over here.
And ran to the airport. No, he ran home from Perth Airport.
Correct. He played over here and he was either an interchange when they barely used interchange. He barely got on the field. So when he got home, he's just ran home the 10Ks or whatever it was from the airport. I'm not quite sure who it was.
No, you're right. It was John Anear.
Yeah. What are you allowed to do today away from the official club training program?
Yeah, you certainly got to report back to what you're doing with your fitness staff now. But in saying that, if you don't get the numbers that you require in a game or they've seen to be the hardest game of AFL, obviously they get data from all around the AFL, so it's not just the Essendon Football Club. That you got to top up most weeks if you don't get to a certain level. But as personally, I enjoy going for a walk, so it's a half an hour, 40-minute walk every day. And then just adding maybe a couple of swims on top of that a week is what I find that to maintain the fitness or the work that you've done from November to March so you don't lose it by September.
So basically, if all the skin folds are right and all the numbers are right in the game, then there's no need to... Then you're at the right level.
Yeah, pretty much. There's a lot of emphasis on skin folds and probably running data and all that sort of stuff. But in the
end, unless you're sneaking a packet of Winnie Blues a day and they just don't know that you... Unless there's some... There's no real negatives that you could do that they wouldn't know about, because if it's bad eating, it'll come out in
your... Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Everything is monitored. Obviously, we've got full-time dietitians. We've got probably 4 or 5 different fitness coaches. There's a head fitness coach, but there's one assigned to each line group, so one for mids, backs, forwards, development group. Probably development group are the ones that get probably scrutinised the most, because they're first couple of years in the system and getting taught how to train properly, live like an AFL footballer. And then once you get past that stage, you get a fair idea of what you have to do to maintain and to get to a level that you can perform for hopefully 26 weeks.
Is it... Are fitness levels reached in a fairly uniform way? In other words, running or whatever the program is, let's say you've got a player who simply just doesn't like running or doesn't run well. Can he substitute that with cycling, or can you report to teacher with a note from mum and say, you know, Brent can't swim because he's allergic to chlorine. Can he be excused?
No, there's no real excuses. Pretty much, you got to. Obviously, there's exemptions for blokes who, say, Jason Winderlich, who's had two lots of back surgery. He might not do as much workload as someone else, but he's certainly making it up in other areas that he is or that he's allowed to, or he's been advised by the surgeons that would be best for him. There's all different sorts of scenarios. So Tate Pears might not run 2 days in a row because he had an Achilles operation. It's just stuff like that to be able to maintain fitness or gain fitness in other areas. And the football club are pretty proactive in that, whether it's altitude training or anything like that, to be able to gain an edge.
Welcome back to the whiteboard. What is the whiteboard? It's a real opportunity for football fans to get an insight into the life of a current AFL footballer and then put it into perspective, travel back in the time machine to the Paleozoic age when Robert Shaw played and find out what football was like then.
When it was like then? Just very quickly, because we're here. Well, I had Des Tudnam, and pre-season training was at the showgrounds.
Were you there the year he made them crawl around the ground on his knees?
I was responsible because I was 18 years of age and I played in that game. We led by 3 or 4 goals at quarter time against Carlton. And they came in. They just put it up a little gear with Swan Mackay and Sid Jackson. They kicked 14 in a quarter.
Yeah, that would have upset Tuddy.
But we used to do.
Hang on, you had to go around the ground on your commando sole on your knees.
I'm part of footy folklore. I'm proud of that.
Apparently, Barry Grinter didn't take too kindly to it.
No, he was a policeman, Barry.
Didn't like crawling around.
And we all did it, and we did it in a line. It's the only time I've, because it was 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. Frost on the ground, icicles.
Any players raised their leg at a fence post?
It's the only time I've bled out of my kneecaps and the palms of my hands. It was that cold. But anyway, we had to talk to Brent.
I'm saying, but that's another thing. Back in the day, losses were met. People would say, commentators would say, that's a terrible loss for the Bombers this afternoon. They'll be paying for it on the track on Tuesday night.
Well, we still see that Brad Scott did that, didn't he?
Well, let's find out. Brent, is that still a part of football, or do the fitness chiefs at a football club override coaches want to administer some sort of punitive?
When was the last time you were punished on the track for a poor performance?
Are you still allowed? Does it still happen?
Punishments, not like that, obviously, but there's still 400s, spontaneous 400s that if Hurdy doesn't think training was going well in the first couple of minutes, it'll just be a 400. That was, obviously, with Sheed as well, it's exactly the same. Fitness coaches certainly do put a limit on how much punishment, but at the same time, the fitness staff also like to get their punishment back in other ways. Whether it's in the gym or anything like that, they will try and find a way to punish you in different ways.
We heard from Armo last week. We found out quite a lot about the team meetings. Is that another way of punishing, but might be hidden in we need a longer, more comprehensive review because of the poor performance? That'd be a punishment, an extra hour in those video reviews.
Yeah. They always call it a teaching lesson, and it's not personal, but definitely when you see if it's you that you've done something wrong and you're up on the screen, you certainly try and duck behind another person and hopefully no one sees you. But, yeah, it certainly does get personal. I suppose we're at a stage at our football club where we're a pretty open and honest group, and we'll put it on each other if it needs to be said, and players take the feedback pretty well, and then once we go out to train, it's pretty much put it behind you and we'll move on.
Yeah. Now that's good. In football today, you see, and footy fans live, emotions up and down on injuries. How many weeks will Cooney get? 3 to 4. So you often see players out for 4 weeks with a hamstring, out for 4 weeks with a shoulder. What is your fitness base like? What is the effect on a fitness base depending on the body part? Because as a footy fan, we rarely factor that in, do we, Shorey? I mean, obviously you know far more about it, having played and coached, but when we see a player's out for 4 weeks, expecting them to come back at the end of the 4 weeks, right, no, do not miss a beat, mate. Maybe after 4 months, you sort of think, oh, first game back, there's that theory, first game back, okay, next game a problem. But 4 weeks, we expect you back on the field ripped and ready to go. Is there a difference having different body parts injured and how that 4 weeks impacts on your overall fitness?
There certainly is a difference between a upper limb injury compared to a lower limb. Obviously, with an upper limb, you can still run most of the time, unless it's a pretty bad injury that you've sustained. But in general, yeah, you're right. People do expect, you say 2 or 3 week injury, you're expected to be right, ready to go. And that's probably where the program's changed from 10 years ago to now, is that the fitness staff pretty much don't let you play. Or I remember one day, Shorey put me through a fitness test with a collarbone, and that was pretty strenuous, but I was always confident in the fitness aspect, because the fitness staff really prepare you to play once you're ready to go. Yeah. So,
what did that fitness test with Brent and the collarbone entail, Shorey?
One-on-one with Dean Solomon off the fence.
Oh,
it was pretty close to that. I think he whacked me straight on my AC joint, yeah, which I'd done the week before.
Just the old one.
Because there was Steins. Remember when Jimmy Steins was pressing for the record consecutive games?
Yes, yeah.
Do you remember who his fitness test was with?
I remember who Francis Burke's was with. Well, Mick Malthouse was with.
Yeah.
Remember that?
No, who was that?
It was with Francis Burke, wasn't it? When he did his shoulder.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Jim Steins with Rod Grinter and somebody else. They threw two at him.
Yeah. Now, Stance, now take the fitness now to positional. Can you explain, not without giving away team tactics, but the general role now of the old-fashioned turn wing? Now, off the top of my head, I think Andrew Gaff plays on the wing. I think Lewis Jetta plays on the wing, but he can do a little bit forward. Steel Sidebottom pushes into the back line and takes the ball out. Is that a position that is still looked on as the wing? Or, like I saw last week, Sydney game, Goddard and Kieran Jack started on the wing. Is that from a coach to say to Goddard, you start on the wing, and after that, does the wing position now become sort of an additional on ball?
There's certainly different roles, probably, to different opposition, I suppose.
All right, yeah.
With the wing.
So there's still a position, the wing, you're on the wing, up and down?
Yeah, pretty much, but you can still, you're pretty much another midfielder to a degree, because you can cross over wing. I'm not sure what it used to be like.
Crossover wing used to be really dangerous, because as a
wing position, yes, you're wing position, but you can cross over, but you're expected still to own that wing. So there might be a review that how many times the ball comes out your side of the wing to see if you're defending properly.
So there's still the philosophy of owning your wing and defending the position on the switch of play. That's a really important...
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Obviously, there's still an element of it's a team defence thing.
Yeah.
But I know personally when I play there, you certainly don't want the ball coming out your side. It just means that
you're not
playing the position properly.
It's interesting, because it's when you see it live, you understand. It's very... And the Kieran Jack Goddard one was very interesting, because the ball bounced and they disappeared.
Yeah.
Goddard went behind one stoppage and Jack went behind the other, and...
Yeah, they'd still know who they're on.
Yeah,
but
right.
Obviously, they're just playing two different sort of roles. Just or they're playing the same role, but it just means that they've ended up at different ends of the ground.
We asked Armitage the same question I'd like to ask you. You said they still know who they're on. In the days of rotations, how quick are you looking at their bench, or who's telling, like if you're on Jetta on the other wing, right, and he's come off another block, how quickly do you have to react? Who does the talking around stoppages? And, you know, because you're a very quiet boy when you first started, and now you're a leader. I suppose one of the improvements of your game has been your talking. But that's got to be a critical part of midfield football now, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a massive part. As you said, with the rotations, you can sort of get lost, and probably teams are playing tricks to try and get someone free in that time. But you certainly have an eye on them, and you do know when they go to the bench.
Right.
It's probably working out at the moment with rotation, with the cap on rotation, that you're sort of going off at the same time as them anyway. So it's sort of a bit similar to 10 years ago that you'd go on and off with the same opponent. But, yeah, you can have four different opponents in 5 minutes, but
yeah, right.
In the end you know who you started with, and a stoppage or a stop in play is a reset and you go back to your original opponent. So you're not actually on him for the whole time, but you're accounted to someone. There's handovers, there's communication, and that's probably the biggest change from 12 years ago to now.
The handover and the communication. Can you make your own decision to go forward? You can go forward and you have played out a full forward before.
Yep.
If you're not getting in, can you make that call?
That's certainly something that Herdy and Halves and these guys are pretty much encouraging us, and that's why we've got to have flexibility in our game. So it's not just training midfield all week, it's training back, it's training midfield, it's training forward, just in case you want to or need to go forward for if someone goes down for 5 minutes or tactically that they think that's a good position for you for that week. So there's all different elements of why or how, but definitely they are tactics that we try and use, and pretty much every side try and use.
But it works in differing degrees because of how many on-field leaders there are at a club, how experienced they are, and this is where Essendon is very well served. Joe Watson reeks captain coach in the old days. He would have kept coach while he played, a guy like Joe Watson, but you've got Dustin Fletcher down the back line who reads football like most of us read Sunday morning papers. Brendan Goddard's a great marshal on the football field, having watched him in his time at St Kilda. There's yourself, who covers probably more of the ground than any of them, so you get a closer view or a running view of what's happening and maybe an idea of where other teams are fading or building. And up forward, you've got Chappie, who's almost, dare I say it, in 2009, not just his play, but his leadership in that grand final almost was the difference between the two teams. So I'm not surprised you'd be given a lot of on-field licence. Essendon might be the leaders in that in the whole comp, surely.
Yeah, they're very flexible. And very
for on-field leadership, Hawthorn's brilliant. They've got Hodgie and a range of...
One of their strengths this year is their ability. They've got a settled side. They've got an experienced side. We've heard why. But a lot of these players have played together, and now you can pick the back line off the top of your head. That's why I asked the Gleeson-Dempsey question, because the back line doesn't change. That's a... It's a very strong Essendon tradition. I know it is from other clubs, but Sheeds, we just never used to change. If you could find your back six, they played together, and it's interesting, they can still do that, can't they, even in the modern game. Like, that back line now is, with the two central blokes and Dustin on the side, it's a perfect balance.
We've got Brent Stanton in the studio with the whiteboard. It's a good backline. It is a good backline.
It's very settled. And even if Fletch goes out for some unknown reason, you get experience. James Gwilde, who's played in big games and performed in big games, I think that was, as I said not long ago, that was probably something that the footy club was looking for in the off season, and we certainly got that. And it's as you said, with Chappie, we got him 18 months ago now, and now Coons is playing forward as well, so there's a leadership there. Yes, he pinches in the midfield, but yeah, and David Zaharakis, they're sort of the three leaders down forward as well, and probably most of our leadership group is playing in the midfield. So
now Stan's Twitter and all social media, oh, isn't he a marvellous player? And he's definitely a marvellous player, but you know, this might give us some insight. Is he old enough, mature enough, ready enough to replace Job? I'm talking about Heppel.
I thought Dustin Fletcher.
We're talking about Heppel. I'm talking about Heppel. Or if you can you give us an indication of maybe another challenger for future leadership? What's Job? A couple of years older
30,
than you?
31. 30.
Yeah, so give him two or three.
Yeah.
Right. What's that make Heppel then? 25?
Yeah, 25.
Yeah. Is he the obvious standout from the people that, from the experience you've had and seen leaders emerge at Essendon, or is there a challenger there also?
Yeah, I think we're pretty fortunate in that area, but Dyson certainly stood out from the moment he walked in to the football club. He's a confident person. That's not being arrogant, but he is a very confident person. He knows where he wants to get to, and he'll do anything possible to get there. As you say, his leadership on field and the way he performs week in, week out, there's no doubt that he is probably the one at the moment. But I think everyone, like, I think Cale Hooker's, what, 25, 26 at the moment. He's growing as a leader. He's just come into the leadership group this year, but he's certainly shown signs of it in the last couple of years. David Zarakis, he's only 24, 25. We've still got Michael Hurley there. Like, all these guys show leadership in patches, but Dyson Heppel's probably one silly that question. Does it consistently.
Yeah, it's a great insight. Thanks very much for that. It is a silly question now, but there is still another factor in the Hurley-Carlisle situation, isn't it? Like, the Hooker-Hurley combination isn't going to change. Were you all, and he came from the same junior club as you. You're a little bit older than him, so you would have kept your eye on him as a young... Is he the natural defender that you thought he would be? And is the other end of the equation working as well? That's a tough question.
It is a tough question. Yeah, I watched Hills grow as a kid. Obviously, same high school, same local footy club.
Right.
So I had a fair bit of interest.
A natural defender or a hunting forward?
Definitely a natural defender.
Right.
He played all his local footy a bit everywhere because he was so dominant. But TAC Cup, national team, played, I think he made All-Australian fullback. So he's just a natural defender, but he has so much presence up forward as well, so it's hard. But I think Jackie Carlisle is probably the one that it's hard to say, but he's probably not getting the rewards for effort at the moment. His effort is amazing in terms of contest, leading, everything put together. And you saw a couple of outstanding games last year where he kicked 8 and 9 and that sort of stuff. And I think he's very close to putting that on week-to-week basis.
Now, you've got Lloyd there. You've got Lucas as a player manager, and you know them as well as I do. Is Lloyd's role purely and simply technique at the moment, or has he been asked to work with Jake on movement patterns, leading patterns?
He does a bit of both.
A little bit of both, yeah.
Mostly he does just technique stuff with Joey and Paddy Ambrose and Jake Carlisle or anyone who really wants to do goal kicking or who wants to have a routine. You know, Lloydie's all about his routine, and that's how he's became the player that he was or how good he was set shot. But there's no doubt that now they're sort of working on leading patterns, working for each other, and talking to all the other forwards as well to hopefully help the contribution that they and the output that they have.
Yeah, it's really interesting, Brent. We've spoken specifically and sometimes very briefly this hour and even last hour about the Bombers, and we've covered Hurley and Heppel, Watson, a range of names, and rightfully so, Howlett, etc., etc. And there's one player whose name has not come up at all, and I think he's almost the hidden champ of the AFL. I love the way Hibbard plays his football. I think on the field, you tell me whether or not you feel absolutely... When I watch him, I'm confident every time he goes for the ball, it's either a win or a chop out. I can't remember him getting beaten too often. He's got that beautiful big body and uses it. And tell us a bit about him, a bit about the bloke, because he's come a bit rough, didn't he, from down Frankston one?
Yeah, the two Frankston boys down there are very solid, and we're, as Shorey said before, it's sort of a very solid five or six players, and you're exactly right. Whichever contest Hibbo goes for, it's either a win or a kill for us.
Yeah, it's too big.
And it makes our midfielders grow, forwards grow, that little inch taller. And then he also provides run, and his left foot is so damaging that opposition...
That's why he's a champ. I mean, really, Dempsey's a very creative player. Chris Yaron's creative. Clubs have got great runners, but let's be frank, they roll the dice. Shane Savage at St Kilda, he rolled the dice. He was coming up sixes or snake eyes every time. It was either a huge win or a huge loss. Wouldn't you love a player that can do both? And Hibbard's almost it in the AFL in terms of strong enough to lock down, fast enough and skillful enough to run with. There's not many of those, Rory.
No, there's not. And
it's how you know. Do you follow soccer at all, Brent?
A touch, not a lot.
Yeah, I mean, Rory, some idiotic Manchester United fan. Like, that's really hard to pick Man U.
Since when?
Oh, you picked them when they were no good. What? When they won what?
No, when they got relegated to Division 1 in 1972.
That's
when
just at that moment you jumped on.
When I was at high school.
No, it's not true, Brent.
So you remember Jimmy Hill when he came on with the big match?
Yeah, with the beard, looked like the devil. He had that little devil's beard.
That's when I started, 1966 in Hobart, when I was about 8 at primary school. There you go.
If you were picking your teams in 66, you should have been a St Kilda man. Now, soccer took a big step forward when two of the most brutal and defensive players on a soccer field, they realised, hang on, if we could get guys to do that, they were immensely skilled. So they have a sort of defensive or marking holding midfielder. And generally it's been players that, like taggers, maybe, that are fit and capable and sometimes brutal, but not sublimely skilled. Well, now the top teams have sublimely skilled holding midfielders, and it's elevated the game. And likewise, the two central defenders were always the biggest, tallest, most decisive stoppers. Well, now the great ones pass the ball like the old best midfielders do. And I think Hibbard is sort of the prototype. In the end, clubs will not want to sacrifice one for the other. They want both in one, don't they?
Yeah, it's certainly an attribute that we're very fortunate enough to have in Michael Hibbard. And I think Mark Bagley's on his way as well. He's such a competitor. He's very similar in terms of if he's near the ball, it's either a win or a half. And he's taken every opportunity as well. But certainly there's that damaging left foot that you can see running off the half-back flank. And it's very enjoyable.
We've got a break. We've got Fletch coming.
Just a couple of quick one-word answers or two-word answers.
And by the way, they're tough because if you've ever walked Davie Street after sunset, you get tough quick.
Kick-ins, full ground press or one-on-one?
One-on-one.
It's back. We're back.
Touch of both. Just depends.
Shaw method. They've returned to the Shaw method.
I want to know what to teach my kids at school.
Bit of both. It really is. It is opposition based. It's depends how.
Are you more comfortable owning an area or owning a player?
I think there's still the element. Even if you're owning an area, you know where your opposition player is.
Righto.
What do you think of football that got to the point you played through this era? Hopefully, of 36 players in the defensive 50. The ultimate defensive press.
I think Hawthorn's changed that in terms of how good their ball movement is, and if one person fails in that chain of press, well, you're out the back and kicking goals.
That's a good thing, isn't it?
Because,
Shorey introduced it when he coached Fitzroy against Sydney one year in a famous game. Don't you think that I don't know that. It was never the Bulldogs. It was you against Sydney, wasn't it? And a certain Gary. Wasn't Keane the star that day?
No, I didn't coach him. You're wrong.
Who was the star? There was somebody.
When? Sydney. What, did we win first?
Yeah, I think it was
Oh, that's right. Yeah, it was, mate.
Do you remember the game? Did Gary Keane play?
No.
Okay, it was somebody else. I confused him. But you took Sydney to the throttle one day, and ever since then, the Shaw method.
Don't blame me.
Well, welcome back. This weekend's football throws up three cracking games. Brent Stanton of the whiteboard fame, I know that's where you know him from, plays for Essendon. He actually plays for Essendon, Brent. And he's going to be part. Do you love Anzac Day?
It's a fantastic day to be a part of. I'm very honoured to be able to play in it.
Very cool. What does Anzac Day mean to you? Because I think to people it means different things, and that's fine. What do you remember? What do you try and remember when you're sort of standing out there and observing that minute silence?
Yeah, you try and remember the past people who obviously fought for your country, which means a lot. Obviously, grandparents and great grandparents, stuff like that. And Sheeds was big on teaching the players who actually represent the Essendon Football Club on that day, giving them knowledge to how we actually got to this stage, and being able to represent those people is an amazing effort.
He used to give a present, didn't he?
He did.
To each player.
Yeah, he used to give us the book.
The book. That's brilliant. Put.
And our players still now, so our development group's off to an army barracks tomorrow. Right. A few guys went to Gallipoli Tom Bell Chambers, those guys went to Gallipoli, so and there's still a shrine. That's
Did you get a medal? Have you won one?
No.
You haven't.
Would you like one?
If I'll just be play happy to well. We win.
Yeah, yeah, play well. Play well if it helps the win.
It is. We're on the selection panel, aren't we? With the media representatives.
It is against Collingwood.
We've never been asked.
It's against Collingwood. When you leave, you pass the next Collingwood player. Gavin Crisisca on the way out. Let him know. Adrian Fletcher joins us. And Fletcher, I've worked something out, mate.
What's that?
From next week, we're going to start by looking at the games and then hook into the... It's been so great having first Armo and now Brent Stanton in Armitage and Stanton that we've been greedy with time. So we'll have a quick chat about the games, but next week we'll rejig it. So we'll do the predictions first and get our player involved, and that'll commit the 10 or 15 minutes it needs, and then we'll move on to life as a footballer. But Essendon and Collingwood, it's a huge game, and Essendon and Collingwood now... Collingwood, not only did they win, but they got some confidence into some kids that would have loved a shot of confidence.
Yes, they had 77 inside 50s. It's got to be a record. If you have that many inside 50s, you don't lose too many games. But I know that Essendon and Brent will be making sure that they turn the ball over before it goes inside 50. They've changed their side around a bit, the Pies. They've got a bit of rangy type, Tom Langdon and Adam Oxley and Paul Seedsman and Tyson Goldsack and Alan Toovey's just given them more flexibility. They can match up a bit better against the opposition, and that's important when you have Essendon. It can run so well across the deck.
The Bombers have sort of variously used Big Joe Danaher up forward and pushed him farther afield. The Collingwood backline is a little bit stretched. Jack Frost, of course, did well on the weekend, and so did Nathan Brown, but there was no Rewalt, and it was a pretty easy kill. Much harder against Essendon, who have players like Carlisle and Danaher. They can be stretched in that department. They can also swing players down with height. Do you think that that's an opportunity, if the conditions are right, to test that Collingwood defence? Because Ben Reid's out for X now. He's done his quad, so no support there.
Yeah, no, they do still need... They're one tall, short down there, you're right. Toovey's normally there, or Goldsack, that they're only probably 193, or Toovey's probably only 190. So they do lack down there, but they back their midfielders in. They want to make sure Swan gets 39 and Penderbury gets 27, so that they can get into their forward line more than the opposition. But I think Essendon's in pretty good form at the moment.
Stance, just a question to Fletch and Stance while you're there, mate. Another one you mightn't want to give too much away. If cloak deep, and then moves up, do they generally, let's call them key defenders in the AFL, will they stay with him, or will they communicate a switch over if he comes into their area? How do key defenders in the AFL usually handle that situation?
No, I think they have a matchup that they want to go into the game with originally. Probably Hurls is the deepest one at the moment. Hooksy's the one up a bit higher. But that can certainly change depending how the game's going. But there's certainly still handovers and that sort of stuff. If he gets out of his area, you'll find that most of the teams now try and hold their back six.
And Brent, how do you have your most damaging game? Is it 30 possessions? Is it three goals?
Good question.
Run that makes your opponent incapable of fulfilling his commitment? What would be, to you, the best scenario at the end of the game?
Yeah, that's a tough question, but you sort of base your game on, I certainly do, around defence. It's an area that I've worked pretty hard on over the last 6 or 7 years. And pretty much try and have an influence with the footy whenever you have it in your hands. It's not about how many times you have it, but just making everyone count that you do have.
And in doing that, do you know if there's a direct opponent or a couple of opponents that you're taking to the limits of their... Because aerobically, that's how we've seen you destroy individual players over the period, where they've just... You've run them ragged.
Yeah, you certainly try and find weak points in certain people's games, and that's certainly an attribute to mine. So if there's a sign that he's wavering a little bit, and you've got him on the ropes,
let's go again for another one.
Go again.
Fletcher would have loved to play on a guy running all day like Brent, wouldn't he?
Well, not with my custard. I couldn't. I used to go at a one pace, but not at Brent's pace. He was high velocity running. He is. He can do it for the whole 120 minutes, which is incredible capability the way the game's played these days.
Any danger, Collingwood? Where can they get him? Where could they get Essendon, you think, Fletch?
Well, Brent might be able to say that their contested ball probably wasn't as good as they'd like on the weekend against Carlton. And I think, did Carlton play a one-on-one, Brent?
Yeah, certainly we were disappointed with that, and that was part of our review today. And Carlton certainly had a few tactics that I won't say, so Collingwood don't use them. But we've obviously spoken about today, and if Collingwood do throw that at us...
Were you in the video stands? Were you in there? Were you on the screen very often?
Not today.
Who takes that? Is it Mark Harvey or who takes that? Who takes the review?
So all the line coaches and obviously Hurdy as well, they all have different points and different areas that they want to show, but that was certainly the main one today.
Thanks a lot, Fletch. Next week off the top so we get more Fletch.
8:05, Fletch.
Brett, brilliant tonight. One last one. I'm going to get in trouble. We have to go to the news, but Paul Chapman played 251 games for Geelong before he came to Essendon. He got snotted by Yaron on the weekend.
How many Essendon supporters?
Did any of the players, knowing that it wasn't serious, and if it was serious, it is your teammate, of course, but knowing it wasn't serious, did any of the players afterwards go up to him and say, gee, that was a good hit, mate?
No, not at all. He's a very good teammate.
Because he would have hit back. He's very tough.
251 games at Geelong.
Did you ever tangle with him?
No, I don't think I did. He certainly liked to have a chat on the field, but... very pleased to have him on my side.
Good on you, mate.
Great stuff. And we're pleased, so pleased you're part of the whiteboard. Hopefully we'll see you in here again. All the best for Anzac Day. You're part of it. It's going to be a huge one. Win that medal. Win a first medal, because then next time we can see it.